as he did when he thought he heard me moan Carter's name. When he did hear me moan Carter's name. Before I walk to class to face Carter, I stop by the bathroom and try to calm myself down. Now that I'm not in the same house with Asa, I can breathe easier, but I have no idea how to ensure I don't talk in my sleep again. If it means just never sleeping in the presence of Asa again, I'll figure out a way to do that. When I'm finished in the bathroom and walk out into the hallway, the first thing I see is Carter, propped up near the door of our classroom. He's waiting for me. When he sees me, he stands up straight and waits for me to reach him. "You okay?" he says, his eyes immediately falling to my neck. There are bruises there from what John did to me last night, but it'll probably look even worse by the end of the day thanks to what Asa did this morning. God, what kind of fucking life am I living right now that I'm choked by two different men in the span of 12 hours? "I'm fine," I say, unconvincingly. Carter lifts his hand and touches a finger to my throat. "It's bruised," he says.
"Did Asa notice?"
He runs the back of one of his fingers across my neck. I know it's out of concern, but whenever he makes any sort of contact with me at all, no matter the reason, I seem to forget just how capable I am of actually feeling things. I've learned to numb myself over the past couple of years with Asa, and Carter negates all that effort. "He noticed, but he wasn't suspicious. He thought he did it himself." My words cause Carter to flinch. His eyes flick back to mine. "Sloan," he whispers, shaking his head. He pulls his hand away from my neck and runs it through his hair. I can see the roll of his throat as he swallows back what looks like pure hatred at the thought of Asa's hands on me. He's obviously worried about me, which I completely understand, but he also knows why I stay, and he doesn't seem to judge me for it. He actually understands my situation and sympathizes with it. I like that about him. His empathy. Something Asa has probably never felt for anyone his whole life. Carter lays a gentle hand on my elbow.
"Come on, let's get our seats."
He makes an attempt to direct me toward the door, but I pull back. "Carter, wait." He turns around to face me again, stepping aside to let two students enter. I glance down the hallway to the left and then to the right. "I have to tell you something." Concern overtakes whatever residual anger he felt. He nods and leads me down the hallway, away from the door, looking for somewhere more private. We pass another door and he checks the window, then the doorknob. It turns, so he pulls open the door and leads me inside. It's an empty music room, flanked with various instruments against one wall and several desks arranged in a circle in the middle of the room. When the door closes behind us and we finally have privacy, I expect Carter to ask me what I need to tell him. Instead, as soon as I turn around, he pulls me to him, wrapping his arms tightly around me, cradling my head against his shoulder. He hugs me. That's all he does. He hugs me tightly without a word, yet I can feel everything he's saying. And I realize that since last night, since everything that happened with John, he's probably been worried sick about me. He probably wanted to hug me and reassure me last night, as soon as he saw me this morning. But simple hugs aren't so simple in my life. I wrap my arms around him and bury my face in his shirt, inhaling the subtle hint of his cologne. He smells like the beach. I close my eyes and wish we were there, away from all this bullshit. We stand in silence for several minutes, neither of us moving. After a while, I can't tell who is hugging whom, who is holding whom. It's like we're both barely suspended, clinging to each other, afraid we might fall down if either of us lets go. "I said your name in my sleep," I whisper, slicing through the silence. Carter immediately pulls back and looks at me.
"Did he hear you?"
I nod. "Yes, but I think I covered it pretty well. I told him he misheard me, that I said something else, but he was really angry right after it happened, Carter. Angrier than I've ever seen him, and I thought you should know. I think we need to be more careful. I mean, I know there's nothing really going on between us, but—"
Carter interrupts and says, "Isn't there, though? I know we technically haven't acted on it, but This isn't innocent, Sloane. If Asa even knew I had class with you.
Exactly, I say.
Carter nods, knowing what this means. He can't talk to me at the house. Hell, he shouldn't even look in my direction anymore. After what happened early this morning, Asa will be suspicious, even though he believed me. The last thing I want to do is cause trouble for Carter. But it seems I've already done that. I'm sorry, I say to him.
Why are you apologizing? Because you had a dream about me.
I nod. Carter lifts a hand to my cheek and the corner of his mouth lifts into a grin.
If we're apologizing for that, then I owe you about a dozen apologies already.
I bite my cheek to hide my smile. He drops his hand and presses it against the small of my back.
We'll be late if we don't hurry.
I laugh a little at the thought of being tardy. What weight does being late for class hold against all the other shit that's going on in our lives? Very, very little. But he's right.
I follow him out the door and back down the hallway toward the classroom. Before we walk inside, he leans down and whispers,
"For what it's worth, you look really beautiful today. I kind of can't catch my breath."
He keeps walking, despite the fact that his words have frozen my feet to the floor. That's all those were. Words. A few simple words strung together, but they held just enough power to physically stop me in my tracks. My hand goes up to my mouth as I quietly inhale. I force away the smile that wants to break out, and I somehow force my feet to walk into the classroom. I glance up and see Carter pulling two chairs out on the top row, so I make my way up to him. My knees feel like they're about to fail me. This is how it should be. This is how guys should make girls feel. Why the hell did I ever give Asa the time of day? When I reach my seat, he's still standing, waiting for me to sit down first. I give him a quick smile as a thank you and take my seat. I take my books out of my bag, and he does the same. The professor walks in just as we're settled. He turns and begins writing on the board. Screamed a little too much at the football game last night. Lost my voice. Go through chapters 8 to 10, and we'll catch up on lecture next week. Half of the class laughs at the note, the other half groans. Carter opens his book to the right page. I lean forward and open mine and begin reading. I don't get far before Carter grabs a pen and begins writing a note. I'm giddy with anticipation, hoping it's for me and he's not actually taking notes for class. I don't even feel guilty. I should feel guilty about this, especially since Asa proposed to me this morning, and out of fear for my own life, I felt forced to say yes. A proposal should feel like a positive thing, but Asa's proposal feels like a punishment for something horrible I must have done in a previous life. I feel like I'm in hell most of the time. The only times I feel happy lately are when Carter is around. Carter slides the note to me. It's folded in half, so I lift the paper and read what he wrote. I expect something random, like the game we've played in class before. Instead, it's just a simple request. Put your hand under the table. I read it twice before looking at my hands. The note is a little random, but not like the game I showed him. It's only random because I'm confused by it. I slip the note under my book and then lower my hand under the table and wait for him to hand me whatever it is he has. To my surprise, he doesn't give me anything. His warm palm slides against mine and he threads our fingers together, resting our hands on my thigh. And then he returns his focus to his textbook, resuming his reading like he didn't just attempt to set me on fire. That's exactly what it feels like. My hand wrapped in his, him touching my leg. I feel like someone needs to douse me with water. My heart begins to race, and I feel like my whole body is tingling. He's holding my hand. Jesus fucking Christ. I didn't know holding hands could feel better than a kiss. Better than sex. Sex with Asa, at least. I close my eyes and focus on the weight of his hand against mine, the width of his fingers between mine, the way his thumb occasionally runs back and forth.
After I've been pretending to read the textbook in front of me for probably 15 minutes, he pulls his hand from mine. He doesn't release me, though. He just begins to make circles with his fingertips against my palm. He traces every part of my hand, my palm, my fingers, between my fingers. With every minute that passes, my mind begins to wonder what those fingers would feel like against my leg, my neck, my stomach. My breathing grows heavier. I begin to take in shorter breaths with each minute closer we get to the end of class. I don't want class to end. I never want it to end. When he's explored every part of my hand twice over, his fingers slide to my leg. He begins to stroke my knee about 3 inches up the inside of my leg and back down to my knee. My eyes are closed and I'm gripping the book in my hands. He does this for several more minutes, driving me completely insane, almost to the point that I might have to get up and go to the bathroom to splash cold water on my face. But I don't, because somehow the 50 minutes of class are up and everyone is packing up to leave. I find the strength to open my eyes and glance up at him. He's staring at me, his gaze narrowed, eyes heated, wet lips that I can't seem to look away from. He grabs my hand again and squeezes. I know I shouldn't. I shake my head. You shouldn't. I'm not even sure what he was about to say, but I have an idea of where his mind is at right now because mine is right there with his.
I know, he says. I can't be this close to you and not touch you.
And I can't not let you. He inhales a deep breath, then releases it at the same time he releases my hand. He gathers his book and shoves it inside his backpack. He stands up and throws the backpack over his shoulder. I look up at him and he's staring down at me. I wait for him to say goodbye or walk away, but he doesn't. We stare at each other for a few more seconds before he drops his backpack and falls back down in his seat. He wraps his hand in my hair and presses his forehead against the side of my head. I have no idea what he's doing, but the desperation in the way he's pressed against me makes me wince.
Sloan, he whispers, his mouth directly over my ear. I want everything about you. So goddamn much, to the point that it's blinding me.
I gasp at his words.
Please be careful, he says. Until I can help you get out of there. I don't know when that'll be, but please be very, very careful.
I squeeze my eyes shut when he presses a kiss to the side of my head. What I wouldn't give for those lips to be pressing against my mouth right now. How can I have this many feelings for someone I just met? For someone I haven't even kissed yet? For someone who is mostly everything I want, but also involved with everything I despise?
If I come to your house tonight, I'm not even going to look in your direction, he says. But know that you're all I see. You're all I fucking see, Sloan.
He releases me as quickly as he grabbed hold of me. He picks up his backpack again and stands up. I hear him walk away, and I'm still sitting completely immobile, my eyes closed, my heart thrashing around inside my chest. I want more of whatever it is he makes me feel, but I want it away from here, away from this town, away from Asa. I know Carter wants me to leave, and I want to. I want to so bad, but I have to be more prepared for that to be able to happen. And if I leave, Carter has to leave too. Not only does he need to sever ties with Asa, but I need him to sever ties with this corrupt lifestyle Asa has created. We both need to leave before it's too late.
24. Asa. I've never been the kind of guy who deals with excess bullshit. Another piece of wisdom my father taught me. If it doesn't benefit you, it shouldn't fucking matter to you. That's probably the best piece of advice he ever gave me. I apply that wisdom to every aspect of my life. My friendships, my business partners, my education, my empire. Yes, I said empire. I'm not quite there yet, but props to positive thinking and all that bullshit, right? When I first started dealing, I was small time. Dealt what I could, when I could, to whoever I could. Mostly ecstasy to college kids, weed to college dropouts. Once I realized that wasn't where the money or the power was, I started studying. There was a full year right around the time I started college that I studied every minute of every day. And I'm not talking the bullshit textbook studying that lands you a full-time desk job making enough salary a year to buy one house, one car, and one wife. I'm talking real studying. Meeting people. Becoming the person people want to meet. Sampling the good shit, the heroin, the coke, just to get a feel of what kind of drug fits better with which demographic. Knowing how to not get addicted to the shit. Getting to know your dealer so well that you become best friends with your dealer's dealer. Building trust in whoever has more power than you, but lying low enough that they don't see it coming when you've suddenly got more power than them. I learned a lot, and I learned it the hard way. The right way. From the bottom to the top. I don't deal the petty shit now. X, weed, pills. I especially don't fuck with weed. It's an excess. You want weed? Buy yourself a gift card to the sweet shop. Don't waste my fucking time. But if you want the good stuff, the shit that makes you feel like you're kissing the face of the goddamn creator himself, that's when you come to me. I won't sell you the Ford, but I'll sell you the rarest fucking Bugatti you'll ever come across. I'm still building. I'll always be building. The second that someone in my position feels like they have nothing else to learn is the same second they'll be surpassed by the next guy. As far as I'm concerned, there are no more available spots above Asa Jackson in this city. I have a good team beneath me. Guys who know their places. Guys who know I'll be fair to them if they're fair to me. I'm still getting to know my newest guy, Carter. Most people are transparent, but he's like a muddy fucking river. Most people, especially the ones who work for me, kiss my ass because they know what a fucking good thing it is to be able to fit inside my back pocket. Carter is different. He doesn't seem to care one way or another. It's his indifference that unnerves me. He reminds me of myself a little, and I'm not so sure that's a good thing. There's only room for one me. My oldest guy, John, is really beginning to get sloppy. He was once my right-hand man, but lately he's become my fucking Achilles heel. Which brings me back to my initial point. If it doesn't benefit you, it shouldn't fucking matter to you. I'm struggling to see how John benefits me anymore. He seems to just stir up bullshit wherever he goes. Last week, he lost one of my biggest clients because he couldn't keep his dick in his pants when it came to the guy's wife. Even I know how to draw the line between my dick and my wallet. Unlike John, Carter is a benefit. He's a good translator. He's quiet. He shows up where he needs to be and does what I need him to do. Which is the only reason I haven't gotten rid of him yet, despite my suspicions about him. He's not excess yet. John, though. John is becoming dead weight. But John also knows too much, which poses an even bigger problem. For John, not for me. Aside from the business, I've cut all the other excess out of my life. Other than Sloane. She's far from excess, though. If I had to compare her to a drug, Sloane would be heroin. Heroin is nice. Heroin makes you mellow. As long as you have it in good supply, heroin would be something you could happily inject every day for the rest of your life. Maybe it's weird to compare people to drugs, but when drugs are all you know, it's normal. John would be meth. He's way too cocky, talks too much, painful at times. Real fucking painful. Dalton would be coke. Sociable, friendly, makes you want to do more coke. I like coke. Carter would be... What would Carter be? I don't think I know Carter well enough to know which drug he resembles. But for about 2 minutes last night, when I thought Sloan said his goddamn name, Carter was the motherfucking overdose. But she didn't say his name. She's never even spoken to the guy as far as I know. And if he's smart, that means he's never spoken to her beyond their introduction in the kitchen. But soon, I won't have to worry about the guys around here, because she won't live in this house anymore. She'll be in our house. Shit. Fuck. I was supposed to buy the fucking ring today. I knew I was forgetting something. I go to my closet to get dressed. I debate pulling out the Armani. You know, special day and shit. Instead, I grab a dark blue button-up shirt I know Sloan likes and pair it with slacks. It really doesn't matter what I pick out of the closet. It's all fucking spectacular. I've always dressed for the level of respect I want to receive. And no, my fucking father didn't teach me that one. He'd have probably made it a lot longer in the outside world had he not dressed like the fucking bum that he was. When I reach the bottom of the stairs and glance in the kitchen, I see John standing at the sink with his back to me, holding a bag of ice to the side of his head. What happened to you? He turns around, and the whole right side of his face is black and blue. Christ, man. Who the hell did you fuck over? John drops the bag of ice in the sink. No one important. I walk into the kitchen. His face is even worse up close. And if he thinks he's not about to tell me who fucked him up, he's wrong. If he lost us another job, the left side of his face will look a whole lot worse than his right. I grab my keys off the counter and ask him again, "Who the fuck did that to you, John?" He pops his jaw and looks away from me. "Some asshole caught me with his girl last night. Took me off guard. It looks worse than it was." Fucking idiot. I laugh. "No, I'm sure it looks just as bad as it was." I walk to the pantry and check the alcohol stock. It's empty, as usual. I slam the pantry door. "We're celebrating tonight. Need you to stock up today. I have to run an errand." John nods. "Special occasion?" "Yep. Got engaged. Make it classy. None of the cheap shit." I head toward the front door, and I hear John laugh. When I turn around, the fucker is still smiling. "Something funny?" I ask, walking back into the kitchen. He shakes his head. "Is there anything not funny about you getting married, Asa?" I laugh, and then I fuck up the left side of his face. Fucking excess.
25. Carter. I make it to my car in the parking lot. Somehow, I grip the steering wheel and lean my head back. I have no idea where the line is drawn now. It's so blurred. I'm trying to do the job I'm here to do, but at the same time, Sloan is making me question whether this is really the life I want at all. I have no idea if I was Carter just now or if that was all Luke. Luke is becoming Carter. I'm pulling too much of myself into this job, but I have no idea how to not be myself when I'm with her. All the things I want to say to her, the things I wish I could do to her, the truth I wish I could tell her. If I told her the truth about who I am and what I'm here to do, though, I'd be risking everything. My life, Ryan's life, possibly her life. The less she knows, the better. I press my forehead against the steering wheel and try to foresee the inevitable shitstorm that's coming our way. I want to be with her. I want to be with her as Luke. But that can't happen until we have enough on Asa to put him away for good. And we won't be able to put him away for good until he slips up. He's careful right now. He's smarter than I initially thought. But the more time it takes to get where we need to be in this investigation, the more danger Sloan is in. And knowing what I know now about Asa, leaving him is the worst thing she could do. There's no way he'd let her leave peacefully. He'd hurt her. And I wouldn't put it past him to hurt her brother, too. She's stuck until he's gone, and that could be months. I lean back in my seat again and pick up my phone. As if I'm being punked, I have two texts from Asa. Asa, where are you? Asa, meet me for lunch at noon. Peralta's. I'm fucking hungry. I stare at the texts for several seconds. This is out of character for him. He doesn't text on his regular phone when it has to do with a job, so he literally just wants lunch? Me. Be there in 10. 12 minutes later, I'm weaving my way through the restaurant to where Asa is seated. He's staring down at his phone when I take my seat. Hey, he says, not even glancing up. He finishes the text and then sets his phone aside. You busy tonight? He asks. I shake my head and pick up the menu. Nope. Why? I look over the menu, but I don't have to make eye contact to see that he's smiling. He reaches behind him and then sets something on the table. I lower the menu and my eyes land on a box. A jewelry box. What the fuck? He opens it and holds it out for me to take. I stare down at the ring, the dread making my skin itch. He's proposing? I try not to laugh. He's fucking delusional if he thinks she's going to agree to this. He also doesn't know Sloan as well as he thinks he does, because this ring is nothing like Sloan. This ring is gaudy and showy. She'll hate it. You're proposing? I hand him back the box and pick up my menu again like I'm not really interested. No, I did that already. Tonight's the celebration. My eyes flick away from the menu and straight to his. She said yes? I had no idea nods could be cocky until just now. I force myself to smile. Congrats, man. She seems like a keeper. Why did she not mention this to me this morning? Why would she agree to marry him? I guess she feels trapped. She can't very well say no to Asa with the position she's in. Agreeing to it was the safe thing to do, even though it makes me sick for her. I just don't know why she didn't warn me. He puts the box back in his coat pocket. She is a keeper. She's heroin. I lift an eyebrow. Heroin? He shakes off my question and calls over the waiter. I want a beer, whatever you have on tap, and a cheeseburger all the way. The waiter looks at me. Same, I say. We hand over the menus and I feel my phone buzz in my pocket. It's probably Dalton. I texted him on the way here to let him know I was having lunch with Asa. I have no idea what this lunch is about, but I want to make sure the team knows where I am, especially after Sloan said my name in her sleep. I half expected my agreeing to this lunch was a suicide mission. I take a sip of the water already sitting on the table. So, when's the big day? Asa shrugs. No idea. Soon? I want to get her out of that fucking house before she gets hurt. I don't trust a single goddamn person around her. How thoughtful of him. He's about a day late, though, but I'm sure John failed to tell him that. I figured she liked it there, I lie. Don't you guys have some kind of open relationship? How does that work? Asa's eyes narrow. No, we don't have a fucking open relationship. Why the fuck would you think that? I laugh and casually bring up all the reasons why someone in my position should think that, even though I know better. Jess, the chick you fucked in your bedroom? The girl in the pool? Asa laughs. You have a lot to learn about relationships, Carter. I lean back in my seat. I try to keep this conversation going without seeming too interested, but I want to know every detail about why he's wasting Sloan's time. Maybe so. I assumed most relationships were between two people, but I guess I'm wrong. Relationships confuse me. As does yours. As does yours, he repeats. Who the fuck talks like that? We're interrupted by the waiter delivering our beers. We both take drinks, and then he pushes his beer aside and leans forward, tapping his index finger against the table. "Let me teach you about relationships, Carter, in case you ever find yourself in one. This should be interesting." "Is your father alive?" Asa asks. "Nope. Died when I was 2. That's a lie. He died 3 years ago." "Well, that's your first problem. You were raised by a woman. That's a problem?" He nods. "You learned about life from a woman. Lots of men do. It's fine. But that's what's wrong with most men. Men need to learn from men. We work differently than society leads women to believe." I don't respond. I wait for him to continue this rare display of charitable genius. "Men weren't designed by nature to be monogamous. It's ingrained in us to spread our seed, to keep the population going. We're breeders by default, and no matter what society tries to force upon us, we'll be breeders until we kill ourselves off. That's why we're so fucking horny all the time." I glance to my left at 2 older women whose mouths are hung open, eavesdropping on Asa's definition of the male species. "Women are the ones who give birth," I point out. "Are they not also considered breeders? Would it not also be in their chemical makeup to populate the world?" He shakes his head. "They're nurturers. It's their duty to keep the species alive, not to create it. Besides, women aren't into sex like men are." I wish I were recording this. "They aren't?" "Fuck no. They crave the expression of thoughts, emotions, feelings. They want to form a bond, a lifelong connection. That's why they push for marriage, because it's in their biological makeup to crave a protector, a provider. They need stability, a home, a place to raise their children. Women don't have physical cravings like we do, so it's only fair that we create the families for the women. But we also need an outlet to partake in our natural urges. When men fuck around, it's different than when the women fuck around." I nod my head like I'm understanding his philosophy, but it's making me ill for Sloan. "So, in your opinion, women don't have a biological excuse to sleep with more than one man, but men do?" He nods. "Exactly. When a man cheats, it's purely physical. We're attracted to a woman's hips, to her legs, to her ass, to her tits. It's all about the sexual act, dick in, dick out. When a woman cheats, it's purely mental. They're turned on by emotions, by their feelings. If a woman fucks a man, it's not because she's horny. It's because she wants him to love her. That's why I fuck around on Sloan, and that's why Sloan is not allowed to fuck around on me. Cheating for a man is different than cheating for a woman, and that's a fact proven by Mother Nature herself." Holy fuck, people like this actually exist. God help us. "And Sloan is okay with this?" Asa laughs. "That's the thing, Carter. Women don't understand because they aren't made like us. That's why men were also given the distinct ability to lie so well." I smile, when all I'd really like to do is reach across the table and put an end to his ability to breed, an end to his ability to create life that might turn out like him. "So what role do the mistresses play in all this?" I ask. He smiles sickeningly. "That's why God made the whores, Carter." I force a smile. He's right about one thing. I can definitely lie well. "So the whores are for nature and the wives are for nurture?" Asa smiles proudly, like he actually taught me something. He lifts his beer. "Cheers to that." We clink our beers together and he takes a sip. "My father used to say something similar to that." "Is he still alive?" Asa nods, but I notice the sudden tightness in his jaw. "Yeah, somewhere." Our food arrives, but I'm not sure I feel like eating after that twisted lecture on Darwinism. I definitely don't feel like eating now that I know I'll be seeing Sloane tonight at her fucking engagement party. "You should give a toast tonight." I pause mid-chew. "Excuse me?" Asa takes a sip of his beer. "Tonight," he says, setting it back down on the table. "At the party, you should give a toast after I announce the engagement. You can string a sentence together better than any other fucker that'll be there. Make me look good. Sloan will eat that shit up. I forced the food down my throat. I'd be honored. Motherfucker.
26. Sloan. I waste as much time as I can before coming home every day. The less I'm here, the better. After classes were finished up today, I went to the gym, then the library. It was after 7 when I finally walked through my front door. John was sitting on the couch, glaring at me. I rushed to the stairs and up to my room as fast as I could, but not before noticing his face. I don't know what happened after I walked away from him and Carter last night, but it's apparent Carter wasn't finished with him, because both sides of his face are black and blue now. I make sure to lock my bedroom door. I don't know if Asa is here or not, but I'm never chancing being alone with John again. Once I'm safe in the room, I toss my backpack on the floor. My eyes instantly fall on the dresser, specifically on the jewelry box sitting on the dresser. He bought me a ring. He makes promises almost daily and never keeps them. The one time I want him to forget is the one time he actually remembers. Just my luck. I walk over to the dresser and open the box. I don't even pick it up. I just push it open with my fingers, not really wanting to see it. I immediately wince. Of course he would buy me this one. It was probably the biggest one in the jewelry store. 3 huge diamonds make up the majority of the platinum ring, each diamond encased by smaller ones. It's seriously ugly as shit. Am I actually going to have to wear this thing? There's no hiding this. I knew I should have told Carter earlier today. I just didn't know how to tell the guy I'm developing feelings for that I just got engaged to someone else, to someone he loathes, even if that engagement means very little to me. I hear laughter outside, so I make my way to the bedroom window. There are coolers set up everywhere, and Dalton is standing at the grill flipping burgers. Several people are lounging and standing around. Maybe 20. Asa must have heated the pool because it's gotten colder in the last couple of days, but there are people in the pool already. Asa only heats the pool for big parties.
Sloan.
Shit. I spin around at the sound of my name and the knock on the door. I rush to the door and unlock it, letting Asa inside. He's smiling before he even makes eye contact with me.
Hey, future wife.
Funny how what he deems a term of endearment can feel like an insult to me. Hey, future husband. He wraps his arm around me and kisses my neck.
I hope you got a lot of sleep last night, because you aren't getting any tonight.
His lips drag up my neck and stop at the corner of my mouth.
Do you want your ring now or later?
I fail to tell him I already looked at it, and that the ring just serves as further proof that he doesn't know me at all. I tell him I want it now, because if I say later, that means he'll make a big production out of it. That's the last thing I want. He reaches over to the dresser and grabs the box. He hands it to me, but then he pulls it back.
Wait, gotta do this right.
He lowers himself to one knee and lifts the box up, presenting the ring to me.
Will you do me the honor of becoming Mrs. Asa Jackson?
Seriously? This has to be the worst proposal in history. If you don't count the one he gave this morning right after he had his hand around my throat. I already said yes, silly, I say to him. He grins and slips the ring on my finger. I look at it, holding it up to the light. I didn't know hell had so much sparkle. Asa stands up and walks over to the closet. He pulls off the blue shirt he's wearing and begins to choose a different one.
We should match tonight, he says. Black shirt, black dress.
He pulls out a shirt and then throws a dress in my direction. I catch it and stifle my groan. It's a dress he bought me, and it's shorter than anything I would ever buy myself.
I'll be so relieved when we have our own place soon, he says. Separate closets.
My hands make fists around the dress. Our own place, he laughs.
You don't think I'm going to marry you and keep you in this house, do you?
Keep me. He pulls the black shirt over his head. He starts laughing to himself as he's buttoning it up.
I had lunch with Carter today,
he says casually, sitting on the bed. Lunch? What? Our class together ended at lunchtime. Carter left class after making me feel the things I felt and then went directly to lunch with Asa? Why? I sit on the opposite end of the bed and attempt to sound disinterested. Oh, yeah? Asa begins pulling on a pair of socks.
He's not so bad. I kind of like him. Might even ask him to be a groomsman in our wedding.
He's already planning the wedding? Asa slips on his shoes and stands up, turning toward the mirror. He runs both hands through his hair.
Have you thought about who you'll ask to be your bridesmaids? You don't really have any friends, do you?
You make it kind of difficult for me to have friends, Asa. We just got engaged this morning, I say to him. Then I had class all day. I haven't really had time to think about the details of a wedding.
You could ask Jess to be a bridesmaid, he says.
I nod, but internally I'm laughing. Jess hates me. I don't know why, but the girl hasn't looked my direction in 6 months, no matter how much I try to reach out. Yeah, I say. I could ask Jess. Asa opens the bedroom door and motions toward the dress, still fisted tightly in my hands.
Take a shower and get ready. I want you dolled up tonight for the big announcement.
The door closes behind him. I look down at the dress. I look down at my ring. This hole I'm digging for myself is getting deeper and deeper. If I don't figure out how to climb out of it, Asa's going to fill it with cement. Asa likes my hair best when it's straight. I know this because there have been a couple of times I've put some curl in it and he's asked me to redo it. The first time was right after we started dating, when he was introducing me to John and Jess for the first time. And once on our first anniversary, when we went to dinner at a restaurant I reserved myself. The anniversary dinner I had to remind him about 3 times. He said his mother had curly hair, and he prefers for me to wear mine straight. I know nothing about his family other than that he doesn't have one. And that one sentence about his mother's hair is the only time he's ever mentioned her in the years that I've known him. Yet, here I am, standing in front of the mirror with the curling iron, adding curls to my hair, simply because I know Carter likes them. I catch him staring at my hair sometimes when I put curl in it, like he wishes he could touch it, slide his whole hand through my hair, and pull my face to his. And even though he'll be on the opposite end of the room from me, not even looking in my direction tonight, I curl my hair. For him. Not for my fiancé. The music is loud, the house is full of people, and I've been in my bathroom for 1.5 hours getting ready. Of course, 1 hour of that was probably spent staring at myself in the mirror, wondering how in the hell I got myself to this point in life. But I have to stop dwelling on all the bad decisions I've made and figure out how to make better ones. I go see my brother on Sunday. Now that his care is private pay, I no longer meet with the social worker to sign his annual forms. But I think I'll schedule an appointment with her while I'm there Sunday. I want to figure out what I can do to get his benefits back in place without Asa finding out. Someone beats on the bathroom door, so I put down the curling iron and switch it off. I open it to find Asa gripping the doorframe. His eyes run down the length of me and then back up again. Holy fuck, he says, stepping inside the bathroom. He wraps his arm around my waist and his other hand drops to my thigh, crawling my dress up with his fingers.
I was planning on waiting until I got you in bed tonight, but I'm not sure if I can.
His breath reeks of whiskey. I doubt it's even 9 o'clock yet, and he's halfway to being comatose already. I push against his chest. Well, you have to wait. I just finished getting ready. I'd like to be able to torture you with this outfit for a few hours, at least. He groans and pushes me onto the counter, pressing himself between my legs.
Sloan, how can one guy be so fucking lucky?
I close my eyes while he kisses down my shoulder. How can one girl be so unlucky? He grips my waist and pulls me off the counter.
He doesn't set me on my feet, though. He scoops me up in his arms, and I'm forced to grab him around the neck to steady myself. He carries me out of the bathroom and down the stairs. Before we reach the bottom, he stops and sets me on my feet. "Wait here," he says, disappearing down the rest of the steps and into the kitchen. I look around the living room at all the people. So many fucking people. My eyes catch Jess's stare, and I smile at her. She looks away, but I'm almost certain she cringes before doing so. I have no idea what I've done to her or why she hates me so much, but honestly, I'm used to people treating me like she treats me. I stopped worrying myself sick about it before I even reached high school. I bring the fingers of my right hand over to my left, and I twist the ring around nervously. I guess the one positive aspect of this ring being so big is that I could probably use it in self-defense. Might come in handy if I find myself alone with John again. I can feel the anxiousness crawl into my stomach before I even notice him staring. Carter is on the other side of the living room. He's leaning against the wall next to Dalton. His arms are folded together, and true to his word, he's not looking directly at me. Technically, he's looking down at my hand. I stop twisting the ring, and when I do, his eyes flick up to mine. They're narrowed, his jaw set tight. Dalton is standing next to him, laughing and talking like Carter is completely engaged in whatever he's saying. But just like Carter said earlier, he can't see anything else. He only sees me. His expression doesn't waver, even when Asa returns with two glasses of champagne and forces one of them into my hands. Carter still doesn't look away. It's almost as if he's torturing himself on purpose. I try to save him a little bit of pain and look away first. It probably doesn't help that I look up at Asa. I can still feel Carter's eyes on me as Asa raises his glass.
"Fuckers," he yells. "Turn off the music."
A few seconds later, the music cuts off. Everyone in the room turns toward us, and I suddenly want to run back up the stairs and hide. I force myself not to look at Carter. Once Asa has everyone's attention, he says,
"Most of you already know, because I haven't kept my fucking mouth shut since she said yes."
He holds up my hand.
"But she said yes!"
Collective cheers and congratulations come from the room, but they quickly dwindle as it becomes apparent that Asa isn't finished speaking.
"I've loved this girl for a long time now," he says. "She's my fucking world, so it's about damn time we make it official."
He smiles at me, and I'd be lying if I said there wasn't something inside me that feels a little something for him, even if it is only sympathy at this point. Somewhere deep inside, I know he is the way he is because of the hand he was dealt as a child. A part of me can't fault him for that. But just because a lot of his behavior can probably be excused by whatever awful people were around him as a child doesn't mean I'm required to subject myself to a life of unhappiness simply because he loves me. Because he does love me. He may love me with his own twisted take on love, but he does love me. That much is obvious. Asa points across the room.
"Carter, my man, help us celebrate this monumental occasion with a toast."
I close my eyes. Why is he pulling Carter into this? I can't look. I can't.
"Someone get that fucker a glass of champagne," Asa yells.
I open my eyes and slowly drag them across the room toward Carter, who still has the same expression on his face. Only this time, he's being handed a glass of champagne. And a chair to stand on. Fuck my life. Asa pulls me against him and kisses the side of my head as we both watch Carter step onto the chair. The room is incredibly quiet. He's commanded the room in a way that Asa didn't even command it, and Carter hasn't even spoken a word yet. It feels like they all care more about what Carter has to say than what Asa had to say. Something I hope Asa doesn't notice. Carter doesn't look at me. He winks at Asa and brings his glass of champagne to his mouth. He downs the entire glass in one gulp before he even makes the toast. When his glass is empty, he holds it out to Dalton, who is holding the bottle of champagne. He refills Carter's glass, and then Carter pulls it to his chest and looks straight at Asa. I can see him blow out a quick, pent-up breath right before he begins speaking.
It's hard to believe we've reached the age of engagements, marriages, creating families, but it's even harder to believe that Asa Jackson is the one beating us all to it.
A few laughs break out around the room.
I've never really seen myself as the type of guy who would settle down, but after spending time with Asa and getting to know him better, witnessing firsthand how much he values his relationship with Sloane, he may have just changed my mind. Because if he can end up with a girl as beautiful as her, then maybe it's not too late for the rest of us.
People begin to raise their glasses, but Carter waves a hand in the air to hush them. I can feel Asa tense at my side, but I've been tense since Carter started speaking.
I'm not finished,
Carter says, his eyes roaming over the crowd.
Asa Jackson deserves a longer toast than this, you impatient fuckers.
More laughs. Carter downs his second glass of champagne and then waits for Dalton to refill it for a third time. My pulse is racing so hard. I'm praying Asa doesn't grab my wrist and feel it.
While Sloane is very, very beautiful,
Carter says, making sure not to look at me.
Looks have shit all to do with love. Love isn't found in the attraction you have to someone. Love isn't found in the laughter you share. Love isn't even found in all the things you have in common. Love is not, in any way, shape, or form, defined by nor found in the abundance of bliss it brings to people.
He downs his third glass of champagne, and with the same routine, Dalton fills Carter's glass for a fourth time. I take a sip of my own glass now that my mouth and throat have completely run dry.
Love, Carter says,
his voice a little more slurred and a little bit louder.
Love is not found. Love finds.
Carter's eyes move across the room until they land on mine.
Love finds you in the forgiveness at the tail end of a fight. Love finds you in the empathy you feel for someone else. Love finds you in the embrace that follows a tragedy. Love finds you in the celebration after the conquering of an illness. Love finds you in the devastation after the surrender to an illness.
Carter raises his glass.
To Asa and Sloane, may love find you in every tragedy you face.
The room erupts in cheers. My heart erupts in my chest. Asa's mouth finds mine and he kisses me. Then he's gone. Disappeared into the crowd of people clamoring to pat him on the back, congratulate him, and inflate his ego. I'm left standing on the stairs, staring at the guy who is still standing on his chair, staring back at me. He stares for several seconds, and I can't look away. Then he downs his fourth glass of champagne, wipes his mouth, and steps off the chair, disappearing into the crowd. I put my hand on my stomach and release all the breath I've been holding since he began his speech. Love finds you in the tragedies. That's certainly where Carter found me, in the midst of a series of tragedies. My eyes scan the crowd until I spot Asa on the other side of the room, staring straight at me. Suspicion has replaced the smile that's been affixed to his face all evening. His eyes are focused on mine with the same intensity mine were just focused on Carter's. I can't even find the strength to fake a smile. Asa downs a shot and slams it on the table next to him. Kevin refills it, and he downs that one. Then another. His gaze never once wavers from mine.
27. Asa. Another. That's five already, Asa, Kevin says. It's barely after 9. You'll be out by 10 if you keep this up. I tear my eyes from Sloane and glare at Kevin. He concedes, pouring the 6th shot, and I down it. When I look back at the stairs, she's gone. I glance around the room, but I don't see her. I immediately part through the crowd and make my way up the stairs toward our bedroom. When I open the door, I find her sitting on the bed, staring down at her hand. She glances up at me and smiles, but it looks forced. It looks forced a lot here lately. "Why are you up here?" I ask her. She shrugs. "You know I don't like parties." She used to, just like she used to sleep naked, on her stomach. I take two steps until I'm standing in front of her, looking down on her. "What'd you think of Carter's toast?" She wets her lips and shrugs again.
"It was a little hard to follow. Kind of confusing, actually."
I nod, watching her reaction carefully. "Was it? Is that why you were staring at him after I walked away?" She tilts her head a little. A move people make when they're confused. Or maybe it's a move people make when they're only pretending to be confused. The one thing about Sloane that I don't like is that she's smart. Smarter than most girls. Even smarter than a lot of men I know. She might even be a good liar, because I've yet to catch her in one. I lower my hand to the side of her face and tilt her gaze up to mine. "I've already asked you this once. This is the last time, Sloane." If I didn't know better, I'd say she was trembling. Could be the 6 shots rushing through my bloodstream, though. I trail my fingers across her cheekbone. I pause at her lips and then slowly trace them. "Do you want to fuck him?" Her neck stiffens and she pulls away.
"Asa, don't be ridiculous,"
she says, dismissing my question. I shake my head. "I'm not stupid, Sloane, so don't treat me like I am. I saw the way you looked at him downstairs. And I'm still not sure I'm convinced it wasn't his name you were moaning in your sleep last night. So tell me, do you want to fuck him?" She shakes her head.
"Don't do this again, Asa. You're drunk. It makes you paranoid."
She stands up to come face to face with me, and my hand slides down to her waist. She looks me dead in the eyes.
"I don't give a fuck about Carter. I don't even know him. I have no idea why you keep bringing him up, but if he bothers you so much, fire him. Don't allow him in our house again. I couldn't care less, Asa, and if you're this threatened by him, do something about it. If I wanted anyone else, I wouldn't be wearing this ring."
She holds up her left hand and smiles.
"It's beautiful, by the way,"
she says, admiring the ring.
"I was a little speechless earlier, so I forgot to tell you how perfect it is."
I'm either a delusional fuck, or she's the best goddamn liar I've ever met. If I'm forced to choose between the two, I choose the former. I wrap my arms around her waist. "Come downstairs," I tell her. "I want my eyes on you all night." She gives me a peck on the cheek.
"I will soon. I want to stare at my ring for a little while before all the girls downstairs start demanding to try it on."
She twists the ring on her finger, admiring it again. "Girls, they're so easy to please. I should start buying her more fucking jewelry." I release her and head to the door. "Don't wait too long. You have a lot of shots to catch up on." I open the door to walk out, but pause when she calls my name. I turn around, and she's sitting back down on the bed.
"I love you,"
she says, her sweet lips curling around those words. It makes me fucking ache to be inside her. "I will be, later." "I know you do, baby. You'd be stupid not to." I close the door and walk back downstairs. I probably shouldn't have said that to her, but I'm still a little bitter with the way she made me feel when I caught her staring at Carter. When I cross the room, Kevin is still standing at the table with all the liquor. I grab a shot out of his hand. "One more," I say, pointing at the bottle and downing the one in my hand. I'll need about double what I've already had to get over the way my blood was boiling at the thought of Carter and Sloane. Speaking of Carter, I catch him out of the corner of my eye, just as he leans in and whispers in some petite brunette's ear. She laughs and slaps him in the chest. My eyes follow his hands, and they're gripping her waist, pressing her into the wall behind her. Sloane is right. I'm being paranoid. If anything were going on between Carter and Sloane, he'd be staring me down or looking around for Sloane, not sliding his tongue up some girl's neck like he's doing right now. Good for him. Pretty sure that's the first time I've really seen him let loose. Must have been the half bottle of champagne he downed during his toast. I take another shot and walk past them on my way toward the back door. I pat Carter on the back, but I don't think he notices. The chick's legs are wrapped around his waist now. She has some nice fucking legs. Lucky bastard. I lightly trail my fingers across one of her legs as I pass them. Carter still has his mouth buried against her neck, but the girl makes eye contact with me when she feels me touch her. I wink at her, and then walk toward the back door. I give her 5 minutes before she comes up with an excuse to follow me outside. I should feel bad about this, about stealing Carter's girl right out from under him. But the fucker has gotten inside my head more than enough in the last 24 hours when it comes to Sloane. If anything, he deserves this.
28. Carter. Is he gone? I whisper in her ear. Tilly nods and unwraps her legs from around my waist. Yep, she says, wiping at her neck. I get that you had to make it convincing, but please don't ever put your tongue on me again. Gross. I laugh. She straightens her hair by running her fingers through it. Now disappear. I have work to do. This might even be easier than I thought. She slaps her hand against my chest and pushes me aside, heading out the back door in search of her new project. Asa. Tilly has helped out with a couple of jobs I've worked on before, but she's usually Dalton's